This fall, fall in love with Cozy. Nothing says autumn like wrapping up in the rich, warm colors of Minky Couture. From golden ambers to deep burgundy and rustic browns, Minky blankets bring the beauty of the season right into your home. Perfect for crisp evenings, family time, or gifting someone special. Fall in love with Minky and shop your favorite fall colors today at minkycouture.com.
It's Monday.
It's September 22nd.
And the word of the day is theic, which means one given to a moderate tea drinking, a tea drunkard. Used in a sentence, I'm not a drunkard, I'm a Long Island iced theic.
Yeah, where I come from, tea drinking is practically a religion and a way of life, so I'd consider myself a classical teaist.
Yeah, and I am cutting it with milk and sugar, so there you have it.
Gross.
I'm Michael Marshall.
I'm Eli Bosnick.
I'm Heath Enright. Broadcasting delayed from America's far center and across the pond, we are the Skeptocrats.
On this week's episode, the Trump administration sentences the nation to Jimmy Fallon.
British racists will show off their patriotism in a roundabout way.
And we learn about the worst science of the year. And then we talk about the Ig Nobel Prizes after RFK Jr.
But first, the rest of the intro music.
Joining me for headlines tonight are my fellow skeptic rats, Michael Marshall and Eli Bosnick. Gentlemen, any free speech you want to do? Clock's kind of running down. You want to get any in there?
Don't be silly, Heath. Nobody with Marsh's accent is ever truly free.
Wait, no, come on. I want to do a free speech while I've got the chance. Okay. I do not like Severance. You know, I think it's massively overrated. I hate that it treats being quirky and mysterious as a substitute for having a plot. I slightly look down on anyone who loves it. There. Okay. Are we still on the air?
No.
No.
Correctly,
also,
no.
Star Wars is dumb. In our lead story tonight.
I'd like to distance myself from the podcast.
Okay. Here we go. In our lead story tonight, besides the hot takes that almost ended our show just now about Severance and Star Wars.
Absolutely ended our show just now. We're fucking talking into the void.
In our actual lead story tonight, something terrible happened to a person I am not a fan of. So I'd like to start by saying, rest now, brother. We have the watch, and I'll see you in Valhalla, Jimmy Kimmel. I've never been a big fan of Jimmy Kimmel, but we're brothers, spiritually, I would say, and we're colleagues in the space of art, and his show being taken off the air indefinitely by the fucking cowards at ABC and the Disney Corporation is the biggest national tragedy of the last 2 weeks by far.
Agreed.
In other news, Charlie Kirk died 12 days ago, and in the best, worst speaking moment of arguably all time, the cringiest thing that's ever happened. Like, if you're constipated and you need to fix it with some cringe, check out the parting words from FBI Director Kash Patel at a news conference where he said, actually, what I just said before, rest now, brother, we have to watch and I'll see you in Valhalla. Ugh. He really said that.
So, like, cut to Charlie Kirk in the afterlife, sat under a banner reading, Valkyries don't belong in Valhalla, prove me wrong.
Right. And then they do by spearing him through the heart over and over again. It's great. I'm picturing the same
Valhalla's
thing.
Valhalla's pretty cool. It's pretty cool. So, just in case anyone missed it, right-wing bigot influencer Charlie Kirk was killed by a gunman during an event at Utah Valley University.
Okay, so at least one guy definitely didn't miss it then.
The political profile of the shooter decides absolutely everything. No, it doesn't. No, it doesn't. But for some stupid reason, lots of people think the murder guy's alignment, left or right, wins an argument for the opposite side because the other side didn't do a vigilante murder this time. So immediately following the shooting, right-wing voices spread rumors about a leftist murder agenda and vice versa. To be fair, the right-wing voices were like, you know, the president of the United States, but both sides were doing some of that. Well, it turns out the Shooter is to the left of Charlie Kirk politically, but again, that doesn't matter, except for being annoying that some shitty people guessed right. Also, they guessed wrong about the Shooter having ties to the Antifa terrorism network, mostly because that's not a thing.
Yeah, and they also said that Shooter was definitely trans because Kash Patel personally licked one of the bullet casings and it tasted of estrogel. So, you know, case closed.
Yeah, yeah.
Evidence.
And I'd also just like to point out that shooting someone in the neck because you disagree with them is definitely a right-wing action. I mean, look, for me, it balances out the text messages, but what do I know? I guess I'm not the New York Times.
Statistically, you'd have to say it weighs that way, despite what you might have heard from liars. But the point is, it was all guessing at first. So maybe everybody can shut the fuck up for a few days when something like this happens, unless you're a very serious journalist with, like, real new evidence. Just don't go on social media and start guessing.
But if I don't have the hot take the firstest, how will people know I still hold the political opinions that I've always held?
Yeah, that's important. Mm. Signal your virtue. That's great. So here's the timeline of free speech getting murdered by the Trump administration. I'll start with, actually, I'm going to go all the way back to last year, November 5th, 2024. That's when millions of idiots who claim that free speech is their big issue got tricked into voting for Donald Trump as a savior of libertarian values. Then we get the inauguration in January. Fascism, fascism, fascism. That's the opposite of libertarianism, just for the record. Thugs in masks, abducting students for writing op-eds, also the opposite of libertarian. And then in terms of late night TV, fast forward, we got the cancellation of The Late Show with Stephen Colbert on July 17th of this year. CBS claimed it was purely a financial move, which, I mean, it's kind of true, considering their parent company got its giant merger approved by the Trump administration exactly a week later. But that's not what they meant when they said that.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it was a financial decision in that they decided to bribe Donald Trump. Yeah,
they did decide.
Hey, fellas, I didn't read the end of the textbook. Things turn out great for Goebbels, right? Like that feller did. He had a chill time at the end.
So, side note, that type of merger is handled by the Federal Communications Commission, or FCC, and its chairman is Brendan Carr. Pin in that guy for a second.
I mean, you're going to need something bigger than a pin, but it's a good start, Heath. I'm yes-anding. I'm yes-anding. Okay.
Also worth noting, right after the announcement about Colbert, Trump posted, "Jimmy Kimmel is next to go in the untalented late-night sweepstakes, and shortly thereafter, Fallon will be gone. It's really good to see them go, and I hope I played a major part."
Nice to be ruling by tweet, everybody. Which is
that's the president. Yeah. It was by truth, actually, or whatever the fuck his thing is.
Social.
Close enough, yeah. All right, moving ahead to the Monday after the Kirk shooting. Kimmel addressed all the wild speculation about the shooter that happened over the weekend in his monologue, and he said the MAGA gang is, quote, "desperately trying to characterize this kid who murdered Charlie Kirk as anything other than one of them and doing everything they can to score political points from it." End quote. That is factually correct. Like, word for word, that's objectively true, that quote. But factually correct and objectively true, that doesn't matter because Kimmel was mean to Donald Trump. Kimmel actually continued on that same show. On a human level, you could see how hard the president is taking this. And then The Kimmel Show aired a clip of Trump getting a question from the White House press pool a couple days after the shooting. The reporter asked, "How are you holding up?" And Trump responded, "I think very good. And by the way, right there, you see all the trucks? They just started construction on the new ballroom for the White House." Exact immediate words.
Look, maybe he was just doing his own kind of moving tribute to Charlie Kirk's famous debating style by completely ignoring the question and then changing the subject to something entirely irrelevant.
Yeah, empathy's a made-up New Age term anyways.
Yeah, I saw it described by a comedian as Charlie Kirk's like debate style is just bullshit crowd work. It's like rigged crowd work, and I thought that was a good description. Yeah. All right, time to take out that pin.
And then put it right back in it.
On Wednesday the 17th, FCC Chairman Brendan Carr just, well, you know, randomly decided to make a very ominous public statement that just happened to align with Donald Trump's weird grudge against Jimmy Kimmel. And it just happened to sound exactly like a mobster threat from a very boring mafia movie about like broadcast television infrastructure and the mafia. Carr went on the Benny Johnson podcast and said, quote, We can do this the easy way or the hard way. These companies can find ways to change conduct and take action, frankly, on Kimmel, or there's going to be additional work for the FCC ahead. End threat quote from the U.S. government.
And look, you're completely right. It is the equivalent of the mafia boss telling you, oh, you've got a beautiful restaurant, it'd be a shame if something happened to it. But it's the equivalent of them telling you that on the Don Corleone show on YouTube. You know, don't forget to like and subscribe to this thing of ours. Yeah.
Guys, we've been on this high road for a while now, and I can't help but notice it leads to these ovens up ahead. Do we want to consider? No, we're still going to go. We're going to the oven. Okay. Okay. Yeah. Got it.
This thing of ours was excellent. It took me a second. So that sort of obvious coercion by the government is called jawboning, and it's illegal. It's unconstitutional. Not sure. I don't know why I still mention laws, but that's how it's supposed to work.
Yeah, it's a little
old-fashioned. Yeah, sure is. Well, the jawboning by Carr led to a large broadcasting group called Nexstar pulling Kimmel from their ABC affiliate feeds the very same day. Also, just totally unrelated, Nexstar's entire business model of broadcast television is completely failing, so they're trying to get a big merger deal that would require approval from, you guessed it, Brendan Carr and the FCC.
Huh!
Anyway, also completely unrelated, Nexstar made an official statement agreeing with Brendan Carr and objecting to Kimmel's remarks that were, again, factually true. And within minutes of that statement from Nexstar, ABC announced that Kimmel was indefinitely suspended. During this whole thing, Kimmel was talking with executives at ABC and Disney, the parent company, and explaining that he'd be addressing the true remarks he made with more true remarks, but he would be addressing it, and also possibly doing, you know, jokes, because that's his fucking job. But the executives, they all just panicked and caved because they're fucking cowards. And now, several dozen boomers, I would imagine, are being forced to watch Jimmy Fallon. And like Eli said, that's very sad.
Yeah, and folks, don't worry. If you can't get Jimmy Fallon, just fill your mouth with vanilla yogurt for 60 minutes at a time. Just hold it in there.
And then stare directly at the camera like an asshole. And just a quick little detour about that podcast where Brendan Carr made his crazy mafia shakedown threat. The host, Benny Johnson, is a literal known Russian asset. He got hired by a media company called Tenet that was being funded by Russia, and Tenet paid right-wing influencers to produce content that was useful to the Kremlin, including COVID conspiracies and anti-Ukrainian propaganda. We've known about this for over a year now, and somehow this guy is still around. Benny Johnson, along with Tim Pool and Dave Rubin, were the top three people getting paid by Tenet, and they received at least $8.7 million that we know of from Russia.
Okay, so now I'm actually looking back wistfully at a world where the podcast he appeared on was as independent and honest as Mafia FM would have been.
Look, I've sat on a couch and smoked pot and played video games with a lot of people. Tim Pool was not the number one person I expected to receive millions of dollars from the Russian
right?
government. It's a weird...
Yeah, fucking weird.
It's a weird taste of Kevin Bacon I've got there.
Yeah. Well, so Benny Johnson, Tim Pool, Dave Rubin, I think they all said they didn't know at the time that Tenet was actually a fake media company funded by Russia. But it was. So to be clear, at best, Benny Johnson and those other guys were accidental Russian assets, much like the people who voted for Jill Stein in the general. Same thing. And then 3 weeks ago, Benny Johnson got invited to the White House to sit in the new media chair in the press briefing. And when he got called on first by Caroline Leavitt, which is what happens when you get that seat, he praised Donald Trump for invading Washington, D.C. with military units. And then he told a story about his house in D.C. getting set on fire. It was not. That happened to a neighbor. And we know he was lying because you can very easily check that. And also, it's not clear if he ever asked a question when it was his turn to ask a question there. I think he just made a big statement.
He's just like, wait, they let you guys check stuff over here? Okay, well, I'll let the Kremlin know about that. They check stuff right over here.
Yeah, maybe he ended with like, and Donald Trump is awesome, right? That's my question. It was something stupid like that. Okay, one other important detail. J.D. Vance hosted Charlie Kirk's podcast last week and said that if you see anyone celebrating that death, you should totally narc and call that person's employer. Well, This is me celebrating right here. Like, I don't know, whatever you need. And it's at Eli Bosnick on MySpace if you want to get me in trouble with HR.
I did the CSS myself on that bad boy. Go ahead and check it out.
Yeah. I'm super duper glad the terrible person is gone. We're allowed to celebrate that.
Yeah, and look, like J.D. Vance says, if you see someone celebrating death, you should knock. I'm going to point out that J.D. Vance gave a speech like a few days ago boasting about killing civilians on Venezuelan boats and joking about bombing fishermen. But there's no point pointing that out because overt hypocrisy is a deliberate tactic of fascists, and also because Vance's employer is Donald Trump. Oh, okay, let's be honest. It's Peter Thiel. Yeah,
right. Yeah, sure.
There it is. And it's like pointing out laws, pointing out hypocrisy. Oh, intellectual honesty. You got him on intellectual honesty.
Yeah, okay. Exactly.
I've been telling you that about me for years, but all of a sudden you get it when it comes to the Republicans. This is crazy.
Okay, but just like bigger picture. Yeah, you can be glad a terrible person is gone. It's also true that vigilante murder is immoral and stupid, especially in this case. And listen, okay, everybody's about to yell. I get it. I know the right-wing political movement just became so much weaker and less aggressive. I know that's happening as we speak. I know everyone's getting free coverage from United Healthcare, but no, you're not. And it's a bad strategy.
Okay, now he's actually in trouble with his employer, everyone. We do not condone the words of Ethan Wright, who would speak of our beautiful boy Luigi like that.
Yeah, no, he is very pretty physically. That's cool.
You get to kill people if you're attractive.
Right, I know it says that on the whiteboard, but I think you just wrote it again. I think you just wrote it again.
I think it was just a way you guys tried to trick me out of murder.
Okay. So you're hearing me say that vigilante murder is wrong. And
by himself.
You might have some questions.
What are you going to do for a living now?
Does that mean that I'm a neo-Nazi sympathizer? Of course it does. And you're very smart, whoever just asked that question. You're super duper smart. You understand nuance perfectly. You're genius. Also, does this have anything to do with our podcasting empire and its upcoming merger with Paramount? No idea what you're talking about. That was a weird question.
Yeah, I know it looks like mango nectar in my cup. It's actually liquid gold.
And you might be wondering, do I have anything else to add before we wrap it up? Yes, I do, by chance. Charlie Kirk was a beautiful, sexually gifted warrior poet, and I'm currently looking at three very serious, very beautiful paintings of Charlie, one of which has a lion and a sword of truth.
Yeah, and I'll just point out that in at least two of those paintings, Kirk is so suspiciously tanned, he'd be calling for himself to be deported.
Yeah, yeah. I'd tell Tim to share these photos on our Facebook page, but they'd get tagged as sexually explicit for their effects alone. So.
Marsh needs a VPN to get to those, yeah. All right, well, who's thinking about cashmere sweaters? I know I am. Time for a quick break for a word from our sponsor, Quince.
Dude, it's really itchy.
Oh, that's how you know it's working.
Hey, guys, what you doing?
I told Marsh I was a little worried about being chilly at QED this year, and now he's making me wear this.
I'm making you. Look, that's a Manchester Merkin. You're going to be snug as a bug.
Right. Eli, why don't you just try Quince?
Oh, is that the pie Marsh was talking about earlier? Because I told you guys, I don't eat meat.
No, Quince. Quince has the kind of fall staples you'll wear nonstop, like super soft 100% Mongolian cashmere sweaters starting at just $60.
$60? How do they do that?
They partner directly with ethical factories and skip the middlemen, so you get top-tier fabrics and craftsmanship at half the price of similar brands.
But have you actually tried it?
I sure have. I got one of those sweaters, and now that it's fall, it's my favorite go-to.
All right, Heath, I'm sold. Where do I sign up?
Keep it classic and cool this fall with long-lasting staples from Quince. Go to quince.com/skeptocrat for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/skeptocrat. Free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/skeptocrat.
All right, Heath, thanks. So long, Merkin.
I thought Merkins were like...
Oh, no, no. They're made of Merkins.
Okay, got it.
Yeah.
Wait, what's a Merkin?
Don't look it up.
And we're back. Next up in headlines, in Show Them Your Cross news, I'm not normally someone who's taken to feelings of patriotism. Okay, like for me, having personal pride in the place where you happen to be born, it makes about as much sense as bragging about how many threes there are in your phone number. You know, you didn't do it, and you're basically just celebrating coincidence at that point. You had no hand in that happening. That said, one of the few, very, very few patriotic stirrings that I've ever felt in my adult life, it came after Noah told me that during the last QED, he took a walk around Manchester and he actually saw more American flags than he did Union Jacks while walking around Britain. Because, you know, this is Great Britain and we don't require our special little logo to be stamped onto every single surface of our public lives in order for us to be able to remember where we are at any given time. We just remember.
Okay, it's not a reminder, Marsh. It's a punishment, so we don't get any fancy ideas.
Yeah, and the American flags in the UK are a reminder. It's for
yeah, exactly. It's like looking at pictures of your ex.
Okay, no, that's fair, that's fair. Now, look, I don't know who else that Noah's been telling a story to, but recently there's been a grassroots movement of little Englanders with access to ladders, and they've been seeking to address the terrible lack of flags in our public life by climbing street lamps, first of all in Birmingham in the dead of night, and flying the St. George's Cross of England, the white one with a red cross on it, from the lamppost. The group calls themselves the Wheelie Warriors, named
adorable.
After Wheelie, their area of Birmingham.
They are.
And the Wheelie, by the way, is W-E-O-L-E-Y, just to consistently fuck with you on the place names, yeah, obviously. Exactly. And look, they completely insist there is no racist intent behind any of their actions, actions that they themselves are calling flagging.
Amazing.
Now, flagging feels like the kind of thing that you should only Google with safe search turned on and should only attempt with a partner that you trust a lot after establishing a safe word.
Yeah, my safe word at QED is orthodontia, in case anyone's wondering.
Okay, I'm picturing hobbits decorating the Shire for a Klan rally, and I feel like I'm not that far off.
Yeah,
you're pretty close.
No, you're right on.
So the actions of these proud warriors, who are definitely not racists or perverts, apparently, those actions clearly caught on. And soon Britain was in the grip of a flagging obsession, with nationalistic emblems spread all across the entire country. There were some roads that were lined with thousands of flags on every single lamppost, stretching for miles. Motorways had flags suspended from every single bridge along the motorway. Flags of patriotism were being erected around Britain almost as fast as China could manufacture them, basically.
I mean, they could wait for them to arrive by Royal Mail, Marsh, but I don't think they're going to have flags in the future, right?
Yeah, we're not going to have the Royal Mail in the future either, to be fair. So these
what are young kids going to aspire to with their toy sets?
Exactly, yeah.
We so sent sad. You a picture of Nicola's toy thing.
Amazing.
It's great.
It's a real thing. It looks
it's
delightful.
A real thing.
It's like serious. It's big and involved.
Yeah, it's so good. It's so good. So these flaggers, they also shut off their artistic streaks, demonstrating their ability to spray paint to almost entirely straight red lines on all sorts of public spaces. There were little roundabouts that got a little red, massively and obviously off-centered cross for some reason. Because measuring and angles, that's for libs. You don't do that.
It looks
you're,
like a racist Smash Brothers logo.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Plus, every white stripe of some zebra crossings on the road got a red cross paint on it. So you could like be aware of your geographic location with every single step that you took until you got hit by a bus that no longer recognized the markings as a pedestrian crossing.
Okay. I know I'm losing focus here, but these people are bad at drawing a plus.
Mm.
Like the art is really bad. Like, these wouldn't even go up on the neo-Nazi fridge when you're a kid.
No.
Like, it's just bad.
And so down in Cornwall and in Derbyshire, the flaggers showed off their true patriotism by commemorating our brave war dead, by daubing St. George's crosses on the sides of war memorials. And then in Wiltshire, flaggers demonstrated their passion for our culture and our heritage by updating the iconic Westbury White Horse, which is like a national monument kind of thing. It's a 180-foot tall chalk figure of a horse that dates back to the 17th century. They updated it with a pretty patriotic red cross sash.
Okay. Look, the war memorial, I agree, is gross, but the sash is so purposefully temporary, it's almost adorable.
Yeah, it looks like a gift ribbon. Like, you know, like you got a giant horse by Lexus in the December to Remember sales event. You walk
yeah.
outside, it's right there.
Or the horse is into bondage but doesn't have, like, the books.
Just hinting, nah? Nobody? Okay.
And then, meanwhile, a roundabout in Walsall in the Midlands, that got its very own red and white cross. And you know, they nailed the brief, red and white cross. But the committed patriots who definitely were only motivated by their love of England and not their dislike of anyone else, they got their colours a bit like muddled up, and they accidentally drew a Danish flag instead of an English flag.
Yeah, they got it backwards. It's great. Like, might as well be a strike through and then a cross with the right colours like next to it. Like, somebody... definitely got yelled at during the neo-Nazi painters meeting afterwards. Like, oh, come 100%. On, seriously?
So according to these merry bands of spontaneous midnight flaggers, flagging is just a pure and joyful expression of national pride. You know, it's aimed at making everyone feel proud of Great Britain by flying the England flag, not the Great British flag, the England flag, including doing that in Wales, which is a separate country with a much cooler flag than the English flag.
Marsh, flag. Sorry, but as an Englishman, if you want to appeal to the Welsh, you're going to have to do it on their terms by loaning them money they will not pay you back.
And look,
so stupid.
It's the best. The only people who get that joke are Welsh and don't like it, but it's still a great
joke.
Yeah,
it's good. It's solid. It's solid. But look, as they keep going to great lengths to make clear, there were no ulterior motives or intentions behind any of this flagging. It's just a coincidence that public displays of the England flag have for decades been co-opted by the far right and used specifically to intimidate immigrants and people of colour. And by which immigrants, they mean literally anyone of colour. This is just a friendly, patriotic, fun bit of public decoration. That's all that's happening here. Like in York, where the Chinese takeaway had its windows decorated with several England flags, plus the word England and the phrase cat n dog, and where the word Chinese on Chinese takeaway, that was spray painted over to get rid of the word Chinese. You know, a bit of fun.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, this doesn't seem great, but maybe they were just, you know, testing their paint. Like, what's the least offensive thing I can write here to make the sprayers work? Cat and dog. My son does it with crayons.
Yeah, see, I wish it were that, but, you know, it's a reference to the racist idea of what meat is used in Chinese cuisine. So, yeah, it's lovely
stuff. Ah, damn it. Damn it.
Like Springfield, Ohio, I think. Again, it's like being a neo-Nazi makes you a kid who's failing art class. Like, the word, it's so bad. They did such a bad job of this.
Yeah.
The word dog is angled down, like, you know, when you're running out of space on a page and you have to angle the word down on the they do that, but they're not running out of space on the page. There's also just a random shape connected to nothing. It's very clearly somebody who started to write whatever shitty thing they wanted to start writing, and their neo-Nazi buddy was like, hey, that's not a letter. You started with not a letter. You
no,
have to start over in a new
it's
spot.
A G. If you
that's
let me,
not a
it's
G.
It's a G.
It's a backwards little tree.
There's a triangle.
I don't understand.
It kind of looks a little bit like they've been playing Hangman, but they've started with the figure rather than the gallows. And so maybe that's what cat and dog were.
Everyone lost on cat and dog.
So look, while the right-wing press are hugely keen to emphasise this is a grassroots movement of patriots who've got absolutely no racist intent, footage kept coming out that made that line harder and harder to justify. Like, there was a video from Essex where two flaggers were spraying crosses on properties above shops, but then they paused their spraying to yell racial slurs at a woman in a headscarf who happened to be walking past with a child. And then in other parts of the country, the flag spraying was accompanied by fun slogans like stop the boards and an actual swastika.
Okay, was it a swastika or did someone just think they were connecting their St. George's crosses in a cool way and then they realized too late what they'd done? Fun fact, I literally 3/4 did this at dinner with Heath and his wife
fucking
a month
yikes.
Ago.
He's Jewish,
like,
everybody.
Like, I'm making a little man,
he's
and here's
Jewish.
His arms. And
it's
here's
ironic.
His...
Don't look over here, please. But it is ironic.
So
I have to yell that a lot when I'm in public
does.
With Eli.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. So an investigation from the charity Hope Not Hit pointed out that this whole campaign was actually being coordinated by far-right racist Tommy Robinson and his colleague Andrew Currian, who were actually appealing for people to donate to, quote, help purchase new flags so we can continue putting them up, adding that, quote, in the last 24 hours, we have supplied 6 districts with 1,000 flags, unquote. And then in Staffordshire, the local leader of the flaggers actually insisted to an interviewer that this was a grassroots campaign, but also he just massively supports Tommy Robinson, who he was with in person the night before when Tommy gave him all the flags to put up.
Oh, man, it's just everything with you people, isn't it? Even the racists are racist now.
So yeah, like, far from being a spontaneous and harmless show of grassroots patriotism, this whole flagging affair has been an astroturfed intimidation campaign orchestrated by the far right. They named this movement Operation Raise the Colours, and I think that's presumably because Operation Hang the Colours from Lamppost would have been a bit too on the nose.
Yeah, might have. Maybe it's time for some pedantic Latin corrections in paint over there. Shit, I feel like people would get on board with that, right?
And in Vaccine Better Days news, while the country spent the week feverishly debating whether or not people dying was bad, our government announced several decisions that mean way more people with child-sized faces are going to die. Now, to be fair, in this case, it's because they're children and because we won't be giving them vaccines anymore, so we're going to talk about it.
Yeah, and they're going to stay children for that reason. Yeah. But look, either way, at least we're talking about shots that might actually prevent harm. So
Exactly. Yeah. I'm talking, of course, about the Federal Vaccine Committee, appointed by Health Secretary and Brainworm host extraordinaire Robert F. Kennedy Jr., which, in contrast to 6 years of committees before his announcement, voted unanimously on Friday to further limit access to COVID vaccines, recommending that adults 65 and older receive the shots only after discussing the potential benefits and risks with a healthcare provider.
Done. I did it for everybody. Spread the word. I did it. The benefits and risks, it's a benefit. It's a net benefit. Also, the healthcare provider who gives the vaccine, gives you the shot, they're right there. So if you want to, like, just check it out, I can be like, oh, is this good? Yep. Boop. There you go.
And look, I hope that the potential risks part of that conversation starts with, so do you remember the last 5 fucking years? And then just ends there.
But it might not kill enough Republicans, you see. That's the point. Now, to be fair, the panel has also said that everyone from ages 6 months to 64 years old could get the vaccine after consulting with a provider. But as the New York Times points out, this recommendation contradicts the now Trump-appointed Food and Drug Administration authorization of the shots, which is only for adults over 65 and younger people with certain health conditions. Now, I know what you're thinking. Eli, who is this group of science outsiders who dared to challenge the norms and step outside the mainstream? Well, they're new, like really new. So it's actually hard to say who the fuck they are. And they don't seem to know what they're doing any more than we do. According to the Times, quote, most of the panelists are first-time members and their inexperience seemed to contribute to the confusion that marred both days of the meeting. About half of the committee members were appointed to the panel earlier this week, end quote.
God, it's the worst. Everybody's new. It's like opening a new TGI Fridays. I did that once. It was the worst. Everybody's new and stupid and they don't know anything. One guy keeps saying paradigm and we're all going to have a rash really, really soon, much like opening that Fridays. It's going to be a worse rash.
It's also worth noting that the panel unanimously voted to recommend that the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention describe the risks of COVID vaccines to patients and healthcare providers, which they already do. But I'm pretty sure they mean the risks that we see in the documentaries with Marsh right before they get taken off Tubi. So I understand the spirit of what they meant.
Yeah, and I think the panel also mandated that the televisions in the reception at doctor's offices can only ever be tuned to Rumble or BitChute as well.
Now, if there is a silver lining to this story, it's that this panel seems to hate each other almost as much as we do. A hot mic caught one panel member calling another an idiot, and the president of the committee and a member got into a shouting match over point of order at various points during the hearings.
Okay, but like, at least we know that there's a minimum of one of them that has at least some good judgment, that one guy who called him an idiot.
Yeah.
And a room full of idiots yelling at each other, like they're all technically right about something at that moment.
Yeah, that's fair.
It's not great.
So yeah, it looks like our medical recommendations are being made by a group of infighting, desperately undereducated idiots whose personal political agenda is significantly more important than the public good. So it's nice to know that we're finally being represented in a way that reflects the American people.
Democracy.
And speaking of a deep desire to be in another country, let's toss things over to our sponsor this week, ExpressVPN. Okay, so watch what she does now.
Nope, sorry. Hacker time.
Oh, come on. She was just about to peel the dumpling.
Hey, guys, what's the matter here?
Oh, hey, Marsh. I'm trying to show Heath my favorite TikTok monkey Zing Zing, but his hacker rule keeps ruining the videos.
His hacker rule?
That's right, Marsh. You can never be too safe online, which is why I slam my laptop shut every 45 seconds just in case I'm being hacked.
Right. So that's, well, that's nothing. But like, if you do want to keep your traffic secure, you could try a VPN from ExpressVPN.
What's ExpressVPN?
ExpressVPN stops hackers from stealing your data by creating a secure, encrypted tunnel between your device and the internet.
I don't know, Marsh. I'm not exactly a computer whiz. Can I still use it?
Oh, yeah, you sure can. You just fire up the app and you click one button to get started. Plus, it works well with phones, laptops, tablets, and more, so you can stay secure on the go.
Amazing. But have you actually tried it?
I sure have. I genuinely use a VPN to watch movies from other countries, protect myself online, and stop myself being arrested by the UK government.
Sure. I am sold. Where do I sign up?
Secure your online data today by visiting expressvpn.com/skeptocrat. That's expressvpn.com/skeptocrat to find out how you can get up to 4 extra months for free. That's expressvpn.com/skeptocrat.
All right. Thanks, Marsh.
Hey, is your hacker rule ever a problem when you're watching?
Hasn't been an issue.
Got it.
No.
And we're back. And next up in headlines in Marching Crowder news.
Fantastic.
As the official, albeit, you know, self-appointed, UK correspondent for The Skeptocrat, I would love to be bringing you something fun this week. You know, as a bit of a palate cleanse from all the stuff we've talked about.
I could have been
telling you about how that new party that got started by Jeremy Corbyn has already dissolved into infighting and acrimony and splitting.
Come on.
In a caricature of left-wing politics so perfect, the party has collapsed before it even had an official name.
Yeah, and in England, it's much harder to blame Joe Biden when that happens, so...
We could send him over if you want.
You want a loaner? You want him? He doesn't know where he is at any given time anyways. As long as you keep it kind of golfy, he's fine.
Yeah,
seriously,
exactly.
Though, the after party, they're done? Whatever,
yeah, the your party. Yeah, it's genuinely, the two of them started, Jeremy Corbyn and Zara Sultana. It's split. One of them is going with your party. The other was going with our party. And a third party, like, started by neither of them has started up to challenge both of them.
They literally did, like, the People's Front of after party and split.
Yeah, they literally did. We literally had two left-wing socialists in a room and came out with three parties. That's literally what happened here. Yeah, amazing.
Amazing.
Anyway, or, you know, we could have been talking about Trump's state visit to the UK, where we got to watch him bronzed up to the nines and making the most awkward, like, banquet table small talk with King Prince Charles in a way that, honestly, if that had to continue for eternity, it would be the hell both of those men deserve.
So when you were on Epstein Island, did you ever get the fish with the creams? Oh, not here? Okay, well then you think of something to talk about, Andrew.
Jesus Christ.
I don't care that you're not that one. Think of something to talk about.
Or, you know,
Kipling
I could...
had some good ideas. He's British, right?
Oh, you know, I could talk
White
about
man's
how
burden,
the
am I right?
unhinged response to Charlie Kirk's death has made it all the way over to these shores with a Reform UK councillor in Wales storming out of a council meeting, quote, in disbelief... when he realised that the council meeting's agenda didn't include a single mention of Charlie Kirk amidst the regular discussion of bin collection and car parking policies in the Taunton Borough region.
Wow, just stifling discourse and storming out, basically spitting on Charlie's grave, this guy. Offensive.
But yeah, I can't actually go into detail about any of that stuff because the largest mass march of far-right fascists took place in London last weekend, and I'm therefore duty-bound to make everyone feel sad about it. This was the Unite the Kingdom rally. It saw flag-waving morons fill the streets of London in what was billed as the UK's largest festival of free speech. It was organised by Tommy Robinson, the far-right cool. fascist activist and cocaine connoisseur. And, you know, because it's such a dedicated celebration of free speech, the march was led by such pluralistic voices as the far-right journalist Katie Hopkins, the far-right former actor and failed mayoral candidate Lawrence Fox, and a range of far-right politicians from France, Belgium, Denmark, Germany, the Netherlands, Poland, and Romania. Like, say what you like about the xenophobes of the British far right, but you can't deny they have an outward-looking and internationalist attitude yeah. to their racist company that they keep.
Diversity.
Hey, how many Jews did you turn in during World War II? You know what? Stop right there. You started to answer, you're in.
Stop mouthing the number. Don't mouth. Yeah, no, I see you. I see you saying it.
Still, you know, this was a rally all about free speech, and it was planned in the weeks before the assassination of Charlie Kirk, but wasting absolutely no opportunity to use the imagery of their dead boy martyr to whip up fervor. Photos of Kirk's face were all held aloft during the rally, daubed with the words courage, alongside signs that read, "We are all Charlie." Which, I think that last one, I think that was a misprint. It was meant to read, "We are all on Charlie."
Podcast listener, Marsh has informed us here in our notes that Charlie is British slang for cocaine. But for a second, I thought they were suggesting paying tribute in a really irreverent manner. I mean, I liked it, but I was taken aback.
Yeah, and the marching crowd, it was the same reference, you know, comes back around. So this was a crowd that seriously believed that it was wrong to perpetrate political violence. But it was also a crowd that was committed to free speech, which, you know, you can see there's going to be some tension there. So it's presumably why at least one marcher felt entirely justified to tell a televised interviewer, "Keir Starmer needs to be assassinated and someone needs to shoot Keir Starmer." So, you know, marketplace of ideas, you know, prove me wrong.
Exactly.
That's illegal speech, even in the sovereign thunderdome of ideas over here in the U.S. Anyway, Palestine Action is fighting for a good cause. Thoughts, Marsh? You have any thoughts about them?
Still, you can't hold the words of random guy. You can't hold the words of a random guy. I'm carrying on. You can't hold the words of a random guy in the crowd. You can't hold them against the entire march. You know, it's not like he was on stage calling for violence or saying, for example, quote, "Whether you choose violence or not, violence is coming to you. You either fight back or you die. That's the truth, I think," unquote. Yeah, the random guy wasn't saying that because those were the words of Elon Musk in the video interview that he gave Tommy Robinson on stage in front of the entire crowd, where Musk called for the immediate dissolution of the British government.
"I don't know if you guys saw, but I already did America and I'd kind of like to do two in one year."
Okay. I'm not condoning violence. Of course I'm not. But if Big Balls gets beat up by a pack of socialist orphan kids in the UK, I will enjoy hearing about that. That would be fun.
So yeah, we've
zero
got
zero Heath points. I can't give Heath points for that, but
I don't think your Heath points, they don't translate internationally anyway.
It's true, yeah, they're British pounds.
Yeah, you've got to like a conversion for it. I think like, a Heath point is like actually like 75% of a Heath
75%
point.
75% of a
Nicola Thruppen.
Exactly, yeah.
Zero is zero, is what I said.
So we've got a foreign billionaire with the loudest megaphone on the planet, which he has repeatedly handed over to a fascist thug in Tommy Robinson with a history of criminal violence. And now he's calling for supporters to choose violence before violence chooses them. This is why we don't get to do the fun stories anymore. We've got to cover this.
I mean, anytime I get to do the voice again, it's at least a little fun, Marsh. But, you know, silver linings, silver linings.
Still, look, I can't cover this entire hellscape without throwing at least a little, like, fun coda into it. So, let's talk numbers, right? Because while it's clear that this is the largest far-right demonstration in decades, how big it actually was is a little unclear. If you ask Tommy Robinson, he'll tell you there were 3 million people there. There weren't. There definitely weren't. There 100% weren't. Like, according to police figures, it was way more likely to be around the 110,000 mark, which makes it about the same size as the Trans Pride Parade that happened in July of this year, and it makes it about a tenth of the size of 2019's March for a second EU referendum. But, in fairness, maybe Tommy is assuming that everyone in this march has as many pseudonyms as he has, and then when you add all of those together, you get close to 3 million at that point.
Yeah, but if you rule out the married cousins, there were actually only 11 people there, so it's a tricky way to do the math.
And the thing is, the photos of the march, they do look incredibly impressive, especially one image that was retweeted by Elon Musk, which shows a huge crowd of Union Jack waving patriots jam-packed into a street that is lined with Union Jack flags that stretches all the way into the distance, all the way to the Arc de Triomphe, which is very clearly visible in the background. You know, the famous landmark of Paris in the picture.
Okay. It genuinely looks like Grok AI heard, you know, "White people in France are having a really tough time," and made some like aspirational art of the UK.
Back up, brother. I got you.
To get them a little bit whiter.
And look, right, like maybe it's an obvious AI fake that the richest fascist in the world is too stupid to see through. Or maybe I misunderstood. And maybe unite the kingdom actually means going back to the 1430s when King Henry was the King of England and France at the same time. Maybe that's the uniting we need to be doing.
Yeah. And finally tonight, in a Nobel Cause news, I gotta admit, the last couple of centuries, science news has been kind of a bummer, right? It's been the ice caps are melting this, the polar bears are dying that. It seems like you can't speak to anyone from the knowing things profession without thoroughly killing your buzz these days. But my friends, once a year, that's not true. Once a year, science brings us the knee slaps we so deeply desire. I'm talking, of course, about the annual Ig Nobel Prize winners, which have been announced, so we're going to talk about them.
The first knee up, slaps?
Knee slaps.
Okay.
For the humor reaction.
Yeah, like a thigh-slapping kind of guffawing type of thing.
Yeah.
No, I'm familiar with the old-timey phrase that you used.
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't realize we were doing notes. Okay. Good to know. First up, in the field of biology, Tomiko Kojima et al. Tested the theory that painting zebra stripes on a herd of cows might result in fewer biting flies. And it turned out to be correct. I guess if you hear hoofbeats, you can now assume horses. But if you see stripes, you can assume fewer flies as well.
Trudeau was just doing one big stripe for science.
And look, I'm not going to say this isn't real science. I'm sure it's legit. I'm sure it's very useful. I'm not going to pick at that. What I am saying is I'm pretty sure they were padding out the paper for length, given that one of the diagrams in the official paper is a photograph of a cow with labels pointing out which bits of the legs and which bits of the body. That is genuinely in the paper.
It's important.
It points out where the flies might be.
It does.
A circle that's like, they could go here on the body.
Or here.
I don't know. But less, probably, because we painted it. It has legs. Did I say it has legs?
Legs. They're here. I'll label them all. Listeners to our recent Citation Needed episode on Olestra might take interest in this year's chemistry prize. Rotem Neflovovich, Daniel Neflovovich, and Frank Greenway conducted several experiments on whether eating Teflon is a good way to increase food volume and hence satiety without increasing calorie content. So keep an eye out for Lay's brand of Teftastic foods coming to the grocery aisle soon, I'm sure.
Okay, I think this is smart because you can't end up with microplastics in the environment if they're lining all of our stomachs instead.
Okay, but here's the thing. GLP-1s are magical and cure literally everything. That's what I keep reading. It feels like it can't be true, but I do keep reading that. Like, why are we doing any other medical science at this point? We should just be using those, right?
I want to do those so bad. My doctor won't.
Marsh, you're smarter than me. It feels like it can't be everything,
Marsh,
right?
Prescribe me the GLP ones right now. Tell them that.
The next time you talk to Alice, Dr. Alice Howarth, on anything, ask her all about this. She knows all about that stuff. I'm not the smart one on those, but yeah, Alice is the one to talk about.
Okay, so literally everything until I
Alice,
check.
Alice, Marsh until then, yes. I'm fat enough for GLP-1. Can you give me a bunch? Bundle. We'll talk about it off air.
Marsh says handful. I'm beautiful enough to murder.
If you've ever made delicious, simple, but notoriously difficult dish to master, pasta a cacio e pepe, then you might want to look into this year's winners of the Physics Prize. Their paper, published in the Journal of Physics of Fluids, claims to have come up with a foolproof recipe immune to the clumping cacio e pepe is so known for. The secret? Using cornstarch for the cheese and pepper sauce instead of relying on however much starch leaches into the boiling water as the pasta is cooked.
Yeah, okay, that's dumb. I'm all about the clumps.
You
I
like a big clump? You like
I
a
like,
clump?
Yeah, like a concentration of those flavors sometimes.
Yeah, and I'm all about having something on my spaghetti other than just pepper and cheese. Like, eat a vegetable. Like, you guys have the nerve to make fun of British food. Have a vegetable once in a while.
There are other sauces for that.
You could think, you don't know that.
That's right.
Later.
Got your pepe.
Biting into a cucumber right now.
Sometimes science happens by accident. Archimedes, Newton, the atomic bomb, and this year's winner for nutrition, where Danielle Dendy, Gabriel H. Sengabetto, Roger Meek, and Lusa Lucetti discovered that the rainbow lizards have a preferred kind of pizza. After noticing a lizard steal a piece of pizza from a tourist's plate, the four conducted a proper study and found that not only do the lizards like pizza, but they will exclusively go for the four cheese variety when offered multiple different kinds.
And once again, the entire veggie pie just sits there untouched for the whole party. There's always one guy who's like, oh no, let's get a whole
veggie pie.
People don't just like pepperoni and cheese. People want the veggie pie.
Who's put broccoli on a pizza? Never. Everybody wants broccoli on their pizza.
Even
Thank
rainbow
you.
Lizards know that's dumb.
I'd have broccoli on a pizza. Have a vegetable. It's fine.
God
They're not going to kill you.
Marsh.
They're perfectly fine for you.
We've never fought more.
I'm fighting into some kale right now.
But this list is by no means exhaustive. There were studies on how foul-smelling shoes affect the good experience of using a shoe rack, whether alcohol makes bats worse at flying and echolocation, it does, and whether babies drink more breast milk if their mothers have recently consumed garlic, they do. All important science that will carry us forward into the future, I'm sure.
Yeah, I mean, that how to make bats less mobile research might have been pretty handy in Wuhan around 2019, to be honest.
Yes, that's possible. And don't worry, if anyone brings up climate change, this year's winner of the Peace Prize discovered that drinking sometimes makes you better at speaking foreign languages. So, hey, there's always that.
Layer of Malta.
Catio Pepe.
Eli, did you consider having a beer before you started pronouncing the names of any of those researchers? Because you'd have got a better than a 1 in 4 shot at that point.
I don't think I would have. Some things even the booze can't cure.
I really kind of want to try this out. Like, if you just drink a lot, you just become like a magical improviser, maybe, and you get it right sometimes.
That's why I beat you at that wine bar that one time with that
furious.
One person.
Were you drunk? Were you secretly drunk that day?
Yeah, I've been secretly drunk since 1987.
All right. On that note, that's a fun one. That's a fun one. We're going to close it out. Thanks to Michael Marshall. Thanks to Rob Bosnick. And thanks to all the listeners who liked us and followed us on all various internets. Please keep doing that. Please keep listening and please keep telling your friends. And if you find the naive stupidity of our giving away a free show business model to be oddly charming, you can send us gifts of money at patreon.com/skeptocrat. Just like all the generous new donors, you will be complimented next time around. And whether or not you're feeling financially benevolent like those fine people, if you enjoyed our brand of whimsy and you'd like to hear more dick jokes free of charge, check out our brother and sister shows, The Scathing Atheist, God Awful Movies, D&D Minus, and Citation Needed, available in all the podcast places. We just have one last thing. Let's compliment that pianist. Special thanks to Ryan Slotnick of Evil Giraffes on Mars. He is the creator of the virtuosic musical Stylings You Are Today, which were used with permission. You should definitely check him out using the links we'll provide or by Googling the only band called Evil Giraffes on Mars. Until next time, catchphrase sign off. The preceding podcast was a production of Puzzle and the Thunderstorm, LLC, copyright 2025, all rights reserved.